Okay, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Rugby Room number two at McMullen's Irish Pub here in Denver, Colorado. And we're going to do a little review of the Six Nations, but today's theme mainly is going to center around the military and rugby and the history of where they intertwine and overlap. What I've done today, just going to give a little plug and a shout out to a friend of mine, Simon Drakeford, who wrote this rather large tome on rugby and the military and its history. And this just is specific to Eastern China during the colonial period in the late 1800s through to the time all the Westerners got kicked out by Chairman Mao and his mates. One of the good things about this book, though, which increases its value, is I feature in one of the very last pages lecturing
the 1949 chart. Is that when you were in Shanghai?
Part of the kick out.
Yeah, but there was probably other reasons for that kick out.
Oh, yeah. Just like my military career.
Yeah.
Anyway, so starting to my left, I'm going to introduce Adam Veeley, who was a captain in the US Air Force Intelligence. So Adam, just share with us a bit of your rugby pedigree and why rugby and who your current allegiances lie in the rugby sporting fraternity.
Well, good morning and thanks for having me. I learned to play the game at the Air Force Academy.
Yeah.
I learned to play during intramurals, which is a series of sporting events by the people who are actually at the school. And so everybody there, the academy focuses on three things: academics, character, military leadership, and then physical activity. And so you're always doing something. You're either a part of an official sport or you're playing against your peers at the school. And I learned to play by playing against my peers. And then once I graduated and was stationed out in West Texas for a year and something long training tour, a buddy of mine knocked on the door one day at 4 o'clock, and I was watching Star Trek The Next Generation, and he goes, "Enough of this, we're gonna go play rugby." And I went, "There's a rugby team?" And the rest was kind of history. I started playing regularly there, and I played for 6-8 years, basically until I started getting assignments where I couldn't play. My personal rugby allegiances lie with the Air Force Academy at the collegiate level. Go Falcons. And then I generally just enjoy the game at the highest level. I have really enjoyed watching the sport expand. We have MLR over here. We have U.S. players that are playing regularly professionally overseas.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoy kind of watching it anytime it's on TV.
And is Star Trek requisite viewing for Air Force officers these days?
When you're stuck in West Texas with nothing else to do, it was that or go drinking, and there's always time for drinking.
Well, that's Space Command training, right?
Yeah,
well,
exactly. Right.
Yeah.
You laugh, but those are my peers.
That's what they like us to believe. And awesome. Thanks, Adam. Welcome to the show. And we've got another Air Force, but from a different side of the Atlantic.
Go Air Force.
Yeah.
Go Air Force.
And Robbie Winter, so different rank. You're a comms tech with Air Force Supreme Command, Logistics Command.
Logistics Command.
Yeah. And over here, you're. I noticed you've put this little sign up. You're with the Pirates.
Shameless plug.
Plug for your local youth high school rugby fraternity in Castle Rock. So again, tell us why rugby for you, and your pedigree is quite long because you're also attached in some.
Older.
And attached in some sense to Gloucester rugby.
Absolutely. I didn't really have a choice when I first started playing rugby or got introduced to it. I was woken up rudely on a Sunday morning by my old chap. That's father in UK language. And literally went thrown in at the deep end and played for a junior club called Widden O'Boys back in Gloucester. One of 10 or 12 within about a 5-mile radius of the city. So I continued throughout that youth club and managed to get into the Gloucester system and played for their U8s, U15s, Colts was U19s back in the day. And I ended up actually fast forwarding and joining the military. I joined the Air Force, the Royal Air Force, Her Majesty's Royal Air Force. At age 19. But rather coincidentally, I actually played for the Royal Air Force U-21s against Air Force Academy down in Colorado Springs back in 1989.
Right.
And this was actually the jersey I was wearing that day.
Still smells, too.
I know.
You should have washed it.
It was quite a damp feel, I seem to remember.
So, and Gloucester, and what's the history of Gloucester and your relationship there?
Well, obviously, it's a major rugby playing mecca in the southwest of England. Their soccer team or football team, as they call it over there, weren't very good. Gloucester City, I think they play in a minor minnow league. So very big. So right as a youth, you know, 10, 12 years old, I would get a season ticket and go and watch my, you know, watch Gloucester day in or week in, week out. And I was lucky enough to end up playing for their U19s and then getting into their senior team.
And they were established, was it 1800?
1873.
So that makes them one of the oldest rugby clubs in the world.
Absolutely, yeah. Probably along with Northampton, which was one of your teams over there. They're kind of a very similar kind of era club.
And I know you're trying to be humble, but they're quite high in the Premiership rankings at the moment.
Yeah, we're having actually a really good season so far. You know, I think we're third. Maybe riding off the back of the Saracens being at the bottom because of their points deduction. I'm not sure whether that's a PC thing to bring up.
Are we allowed to talk about that?
Yeah.
But yeah, they're doing rather well. So let's see how they go. And
so your financial incompetence beats sporting prowess.
Yeah, there you go.
And now, for our consumer audience here, your position was as a scrum half.
Yeah.
All right, what does that mean for our community? What does a scrum half do?
So,
and why are they significant?
A scrum half or a nine is, I guess, the equivalent of a quarterback. So it's the person that's really got the smarts.
Why did you ask the question? You opened it. Oh.
But they really have to make. They're the guys that make it happen, make the decisions, and they're clearly the link between the big forwards that go up and win the ball and pass it to the faster backs that are more, that dare I say, creative and
twinkle toes.
Yeah. So my old man, he would say an expression that the forwards would decide who wins the game, and the backs would decide by how many.
That's great.
I like that.
Well, I think we'll move on subtly.
yeah.
From that, and hopefully Otis doesn't need reintroduction, but in terms of military stardom, he outranks all of us. Lieutenant Colonel in the Green Berets, but also written this lovely book, and you run a business called LTO, which is about, did you say thought leadership? Or
it is. So I work with thought leaders, and I give them the edge so they can achieve massive success, and that's an exciting thing to have, working with people that are already successful and they've been helping them take it to the next level of success. So, and don't hold my book next to your other mate's book, because that's a
it's not a knowledge comparison.
Yeah. I'm intimidated.
One of these books is going to get read.
That's true. There you go.
It's just a fashion statement. So, just before we dig into military and Six Nations World Cup review, what we've got here is a bunch of pictures. And as we go through the show, what you're going to do is at random intervals, I'm going to tell you to turn over a picture. And the person on the picture will be a rugby person, either modern or historical, who's played at the highest level. So they've either internationally represented their country or they're playing Premiership, level rugby. And the scoring system, so there is an honesty box here. Being obviously military people, you're all honest. And I'm looking for three pieces of information. So if you give me one piece of information, you get 3 points. Two pieces of information gets you 5 points, so scoring a try. Three pieces of information will get you 7 points. And it's basically name, the military service they are or were a part of, and their rank.
Oh, great.
So if you can.
Wow.
So Otis, earlier in the week, I did give him a little pre-brief, and he said it's like kill or no kill. It's not quite that stressful, I hope.
Yeah. Well, that was the way we did it in the Cold War, was the training of recognizing the tanks or whatever it was. My squad leader would flip over the card, and that was your job.
How many seconds did you get to make that decision? Right there.
Yeah, that was the training.
Not much pressure then.
Yeah.
We did the same thing with aircraft silhouettes.
Yeah.
You had to flip it over. You had to know the platform.
Yep.
So we there is some of these will have a bit of bonus information. So if I say there's a bonus point to be had, you can dig around and see if you can find it. If you have to call in a friend round the table, you can. But then you half the point.
Can we phone a friend?
Yeah, we can only be one of these guys.
I can't use Mr. Google.
No. So actually, you know what? Let's try one now. So who wants to go first?
I'll flip one over.
Adam, okay, you pull one.
Yep.
Just careful with your beer. Okay. Oh, so it's the fella in green. Okay, that's who we're looking at. So.
Yeah, I'm not going to do well at this.
I can give the team.
There's American ones in here.
Right? So yeah, it's
South Africa.
Okay.
And I think it's the big tight head prop, and I'm drawing a blank on his name.
I'm not sure.
No, not him.
No,
is that
not.
Chester Williams?
Yeah, okay. 1 point to Robbie. Chester Williams.
Yeah.
So we're looking for the service should be really easy.
Well, it was Army, of course.
Yeah, there's only one service in South Africa, isn't there? It was the South African Defence Force back then.
Well, that's what he was
saying. Okay, well, you can have a point each. Right, one more piece. Actually, no, I don't know what his rank is. So that was a warm-up.
He was a corporal.
Was he a scrum half as well?
No, he was a wing.
So I think he played in the 95 World Cup.
Yeah.
He's got jumpers on.
Yeah.
Look at his thigh. He's got a jumper on.
Jumper cable.
Yeah.
Those South Africans, they eat a lot of biltong. Pretty big units. Yeah. Okay, Robbie.
Yeah. All right.
So that was 1 point, 1 point.
You don't need to move your Guinness yet, Adam. Let's have a look.
Oh, this is easy for Robbie. You can't believe this one. Let me show the camera here.
Go on.
There we go. Any self-respecting English rugby supporter.
I better get this.
You
right.
better get all three.
Can I get all three guys in the picture?
That's Rory Underwood. He was Royal Air Force flight lieutenant.
There you are. 3 points. So 7 points. Three pieces of information. Yeah. Seven.
You got
points.
Some catching up to do now.
Oh, shit.
Rory Underwood back in the day was one of the fastest wingers and one of the highest try scorers for the England rugby team. I think he played late 80s through to.
So was he in the Navy when he
Air
when
Force.
He Air Force. In the Air Force when he was playing international?
Yeah,
also?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, well.
And that actually raises a good question.
Yeah.
Does in the English Armed Services, do they have programs where you can be a member of the armed forces and then go play at the highest level?
What we
would consider to be an exceptional athlete program in the U.S. Army.
I mean, I'm not sure exactly what happens there now, but the Royal Air Force, well, all the military service teams still have development programs all the way through their, you know, U19, U21 limit. Women's rugby is actually played in the forces more prominently now than ever before. But in terms of a pathway maybe to more professional teams, I've got a feeling there's an Air Force guy that's playing for Harlequins right now. Just kind of got into that. He played his first team game. I wish I could remember his name, but there's definitely like pathways if they're good enough and they decide that that's the right they want to take.
British Army, definitely.
Do they?
British Army and mainly, not mainly, you see the Fijians coming through. A lot of them reside in the UK on their military identities, but it's part of the recruitment package for the military. So there are actually a couple of faces in here, but they play in the Premiership right now. And back in the day, there was quite a lot of Army representation in various national teams. I think when the game went professional, it's tapered. And obviously in the 21st century, there's a lot of conflict out there, so some of that's tapered away. You don't see so much in the Navy. And the Navy's quite short staff, so once they deploy, that interrupts your rugby career, which I think is selfish of the Navy.
Our Army has it down at Fort Carson,
in
Colorado Springs. That I was just trying to think of the name of the unit, but they are professional athletes that are on active duty military, and they're all ranks, too.
Right.
And they play all kinds of sports from biathlons, rifle shooting, rifle competition, to weightlifting, and I believe the rugby team, the military rugby team, the Army team is not there. I'm trying to remember where they are, but they have that exceptional athlete sort of program like the Air Force.
World-class athlete
that's
program.
What it's called.
Yes,
in the U.S. That's the word.
Yeah, the world-class
athlete. So how does that work? Have you any idea?
Yeah.
I think that number one, whatever you say is true is only true at the date that you say it. The world-class athlete program is designed, I think, initially with the idea of athletes who are Olympic quality, and yes. and so that you can train and you do military duty, and occasionally, depending on the political winds that are blowing with whatever administration, can extend to other types of sports. For instance, Ben Garland is an Air Force Academy grad who was playing for the 49ers in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, or two weeks ago. And so he still has managed to have a professional football career. A couple of people that I graduated with were also drafted and had different careers at different lengths. And really, it becomes down to this, a lot of times, to the service of, can they justify what you do in your off time to allow you to do your career? And like I said, that kind of ebbs and flows. But I know that all the services, when it comes to things like Olympics and mm-hmm. things that are very public and of the public nature, are supportive of that. Other professionals, less so.
So is that an attractive option for service personnel? So I know when I signed up, I couldn't get on the rugby field quick enough. Obviously, I did my basic training. There's no get out of that. But as soon as I could get on the rugby field, and one of my mates played Scottish soccer, and same, we could get out of sentry duty, yeah. scrubbing the shit.
You were doing it to get over. That's why you started playing rugby. Is that what you're saying?
I joined the military to extend my rugby career.
I mean, it's an application process, and I think there's a bit of a tryout also yeah. for it. You can't just send in an application and say that, you know, hey, I'm Olympic quality athlete in, you know, whatever the sport, ski jumping, right? Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen. There's a much longer process. And some of the sports, I know they actually do have some tryouts that they right. run at various times throughout the year.
So are they linked up to like the USOC mm-hmm. and the governing bodies of the sport? Mm-hmm. So the military does the back office admin with tryouts or athlete profiling, and then steers them towards the sport and then hands them over.
And then allows them to compete for the position.
Yeah. And I think there's an element of that the military, when you're trying to do that, will give you permissive temporary duty orders to go to the Olympic qualifying kinds of events or the national events. But if you want to maintain in the program, you have to generate the results at those events.
Right.
And then you might get an invitation into the program where you can train more full time. But there's a lot of doing it on the side and at nights and weekends to get to that level, I think, first.
Is it a good recruiting tool these days? If you think back to the thing for me that springs to mind is Vietnam and how the country seemed quite anti and the military. But is the athlete pathway a good recruiting?
It's a recruiting tool in a different sense. I don't believe it's recruiting athletes to join the service to compete. And there may be one or two, but it's really a branding tool
yeah.
more than it is a recruiting athletes like right. like you would to the universities.
Yeah,
I'm wondering what kind of roadblocks are in place now for that aspiring professional athlete at the 16, 17, 18, and he's mapping out his career, mm-hmm. whether or not an option to join the military is probably going to be off the table for anybody that's going to be recruited, especially probably into the premiership teams in the UK or yeah. across the world. I mean, I'm not sure what happens down under in New Zealand and Australia.
Well that's quite interesting, because when I was researching this subject, it was almost, I couldn't find any Australian and New Zealand international players these days coming yeah. out of the military. Now, I know the Australian and New Zealand forces are quite small in terms of volume. So, and with the game going completely professional, I've spoken to a few players over the years that back in the day you could be university. So you have a college degree and yep. do your rugby career. You've got to pick one or another these yeah, days. Yeah. So rugby is yeah. very much a full-time career. So it's, I think what we're trying to do is look at the overlay of why rugby's attractive and the military influence. But I don't think we're going to see high volume military personnel in the rugby arena.
Well, I would say, you know, it's not unprecedented though,
because
just like what Adam was talking about with football players, once they graduate, being able to play professionally.
Yeah.
You know, so instead of going active duty, they go into some sort of reserve status. So I don't see why a and an academy graduate who is a rugby player and receives a professional rugby contract wouldn't fall into that same category as an NFL player, although his paycheck wouldn't be anywhere near the same.
Yeah.
But the precedent is set for a professional athlete because it's a recruiting tool. It's a great branding recruiting tool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Very powerful. So let's have a look at that. Let's switch over here slightly, staying on the military theme. There's a New Zealand military historian, and I was sorry, I can't remember his name, but he was talking about the New Zealand identity around, Kiwi identity around rugby. It was rugby was a substitute for or preparation for war. And so I think we all know it's quite a combative sport. But with your expertise, and what do you think about rugby in that sense?
Well, I'll go. I mean, I was going to let these two go, but I'll throw it out there and get the juices flowing. For me, the thing that I think is most similar is the reinforcement of success.
Right.
So in rugby, when you're driving that attack and you're drawing your opposition to one side, let's say, so we're moving across the field and I'm pulling the defense with me as I work my way to the left, and then I shift my attack to the right, however I do it, and I get success, then I immediately pile on that success. Well, it's no different than in the Army when you break the lines, right?
Yeah.
When we set our attack plan and we break the lines and the enemies, you reinforce that success and you drive through to defeat the enemy, the bad guys.
That's quite a big overview then in terms of game plan. If you look at game plan, game strategy, absolutely, you see a game of rugby. And I always say, as a rugby coach, the space is where you've just come from, not where you're going to. So you're trying to pull the D over here, you know, smoke and mirrors, whatever it is.
A ruse, a feint, all those sort of things that apply in a military attack that we, you know, we put into a plan in a military attack. You do the same thing in rugby.
And I think, obviously, with strategy and planning, there's a certain amount of intel or intelligence, even before the game starts. I mean, especially the higher up the professional ladder you get, the amount of data and analytics that you can actually see these days. So you know before you're going into battle what the strengths and weaknesses of your team against their team are. So it's there's a lot of similarities between the two, I think.
So we've got in-game strategy execution.
Yeah.
We've got pre-game preparation. Okay. And what do we know about the opposition and strengths and weaknesses and how do we attack and defend? Awesome. Adam?
I think the two concepts overlap at the idea of culture. I think it is exactly the same culture that most people have in the military that most rugby players have. And that is, before we ever go into a game, we know certain things are going to be true. Number one, it's going to be 80 minutes. We're going to be tired. We're going to be hurt, right? It's not a question of whether you're going to get injured in a career. It's how serious is it and how fast can you return? And then it's a matter of, you know, play doesn't stop.
Right.
And in the military, it doesn't stop until there's a natural pause. And you have to keep going. Mm-hmm. And the entire culture is built one of building perseverance and resilience at an individual level, because I'm not willing to let you down or let you down or let you down, no matter how much that I am hurting.
Good point.
And in all military units that I've ever been a part of, the good ones have that commonality, right? You are there playing for everyone else, and you only accomplish what you accomplish by a team, and you know it's going to be hard, and you show up anyway. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that's the part that speaks to me, is it's the same camaraderie, independent of gender, location, service. You know another rugby player, you know another person that you'll go to combat with. So
yeah, that's quite interesting, because I think rugby in the military, no matter, and I know there's different viewpoints around them, but rugby and the military, in my mind, are the two biggest global networks in terms of people who accept you for who you are. I've been all around the world, as you guys have, and I walk into any rugby environment, or you played rugby, or you're part of a rugby in your camp, and this has been the exact same with the military. Everywhere I've been, I've engaged with military folks internationally rugby or otherwise, from New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, China, Israel, as well as the US and the motherland, France, and the acceptance is, oh, you served. Yeah, but I didn't do anything. Didn't really do anything worth bragging about. No, but you served. The fact that you did it.
Yeah.
And there's this sort of interpretation of value sets or character standards, which completely overlay with rugby and who you are as a rugby person. Do you find, I know Adam, you just spoke to it. Do you guys see similar parallels?
Well, I mean, in terms of globally speaking, you're absolutely right. I mean, you've got this global network and fraternity of military and rugby people that can actually at any moment in time or any given time strike up a conversation. And as soon as you've got those similarities, that it opens up a lot of doors in terms of just, you know, communication with people and opportunities for anything, really. You know, it's I know it's definitely two of the most important fundamental things that have created and mapped out my life has been rugby and the military, and I'm grateful for being involved with both of them, really.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're spot on. It's one of the things I always fall back on is I had the opportunity to work with several different military organizations, armies, and defense forces over my career, and it's a similar aspect, because my rugby career is much shorter than all of yours, but it's a similar aspect where those guys that I made those connections with, wherever they are in the world, I can always go back to them, or they can always introduce me to somebody else, no matter where I am. There's always a connection.
Yeah.
You know, you can do the same thing with rugby. There's always a connection. Hey, I'm going to Budapest. Mm-hmm. And who do I know in Budapest? Well, I don't know anybody in Budapest, but I can ask some of the people, you know, a guy that I served with in the Hungarian army that probably knows somebody in Budapest.
Maybe it was the original internet.
Yeah.
Well, is there a chapter in your book about get rugby in your business for it to be a high-level, successful business operation?
It is.
Or is that for volume two?
That's volume two, yeah.
So we got a question here from the audience whilst we're on this subject. And we've looked at a lot of tactics, culture, value sets. And on the value sets, which value in rugby as a veteran do you prize the most? Now, for those of you who don't know, the World Rugby markets rugby as a game of values. And those have been identified by several different home unions as discipline, respect, integrity, passion, and solidarity. So I should get out of jail card if you haven't got one.
Go ahead, Adam.
I'd probably say resiliency. I've been to a lot of rugby practices where great athletes show up and they last 1 or 2 weeks. And then they stop coming.
Yeah.
And you come up to them and you go, and a lot of people that I've recruited, right? I know some great athletes that come from the football world. And, hey, why did you guys are crazy. That just hurt. And there's no celebration. There's no, you know, it's
a celebration of pain.
Right. There's, you know, you don't, and, you know, like in our game of football, you know, every play you stop, and then, you know, there's a chance to celebrate and to do and those kind of things. And they go, you just roll for 80 minutes and it hurts at the end. And I'm like, yeah, that's why I love it. And they're like, no, that's not going to work for me.
A lot of basic training when you go through basic training is to flush out how much resilience you've got.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, I think that resilience is absolutely a value that rises up as people participate.
Well, that reminds me of one of my favorite phrases is misery loves company. And, when you're suffering in the stink and we're all suffering together. And that's one of the things that makes rugby so great is because you know, when you're building that team and you're working hard in the training sessions and you're really pushing yourself, my mate next to me is pushing himself and I'm going to push him and he's going to push me. And it's the same thing in the military when you go through, you know, whatever that training course is.
Yeah.
Maybe not the Air Force where it's suffering, but, you know, it's...
hey, not every place has a golf course.
That's true, yes. Not every place has a golf course.
We did have a 10-pin bowling alley at one of my Air Force bases that was owned by the U.S. military back in the day. Seriously.
So would you say that's a trust? Or?
Yeah, it builds a... It, it's. it's a human connection, I think, that truly builds within that organization. When you're going through, when you're suffering together, it brings you closer. Mm-hmm. You look back at units that have gone through combat together.
Yeah.
And how that unit has a cohesion and a connection that is really, you can't define it, but it's an overused phrase, the brotherhood, but it's true because of the suffering that you go through in that situation. Yeah. And you have a commonality, kind of going back to that commonality of all having rugby as a base and all having military as a base, but you have that common experience which draws you together. And when that common experience is traumatic or hard or suffering, mm-hmm. it brings you even closer together and makes you more of a tight-knit organization, which is a critical aspect for rugby success.
Absolutely, because it's not a game of individuals, it's a game of units. So you've got resilience, trust, and commonality.
The teamwork element for me, because there's definitely been a transition in what my involvement with rugby is from being a player to going into more of the coaching world. So. Just from trying to understand teamwork and teamwork dynamics and trying to bring that to some leadership skills, that's helped me become a better coach and actually being able to apply some of those principles to my career outside of rugby as well. So some of the aspects of the values going back to like the teamwork and integrity definitely has a translation into the coaching model and what we try and achieve through that vehicle and involvement with rugby.
So let's switch around then and look at the rugby itself. So World Cup,